5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Yes, hello, welcome to another Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet is also back with me. Hi, Robin.
I thought you said Robert.
Hi,
everybody.
Did I say Robert?
Did I say Robin?
I honestly, do you know, I have no idea. I'm on my 8th coffee of the day and it's not doing the job. Although I've come to a conclusion that decaf coffee with sugar in it doesn't work.
Well, you'll get some energy, but probably not the right kind. I don't know. And the waistline wouldn't thank you.
No, it doesn't thank me ever, quite frankly. Anyway, we have a special guest with us this week because I'm really pleased to say we're going to be talking, of course, about your emails and getting into those with Andy a bit later. But before all that, I'm really glad to welcome RNIB Connect Radio's own Red Sale to the show. Welcome to the show, Red.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hear the crowd roar. So Red is the host of Read On here on RNIB Connect Radio, our book show. But we're not talking about books today, Red.
No, you've got me out of my comfort zone and firmly in my discomfort zone talking about technology.
So, you know, I think we should maybe start because the whole thing, the whole reason we've got you on this week is because you're in the market for a new computer. And you came to me and you said, look, I want to get something new. You're thinking of going down the Windows route, and we'll talk a little bit about why that is in a minute. But I think I really thought it was an interesting topic, and I wanted you to come on the show because I think there's lots of people who are in the same position. And I think buying a computer when you're blind does require a bit more thought in some areas than it does for someone who's sighted. You know, when you're sighted, you're thinking about the best screen and the, you know, the greatest performance and all the things that you would, you know, blind people are looking forward to some degree. But there are some little things that you have to think about, especially if you're a screen reader user. So we're going to get into all that. But before we do, tell us about your journey into accessible tech, because you haven't always been blind, have you, Red?
No, I've had fading eyesight since I was about 19. I've got retinitis pigmentosa. So for many years, I just relied on magnification and making the text bolder on my Mac, which I found very very accessible, very easy to use. But now that I'm 50 and I've got no useful sight at all left, I can't actually use any of that on my Mac anymore. And I find VoiceOver utterly impenetrable. Since I joined RNIB, since I joined RNIB 3 years ago, I turned back to the Windows side because that's what we all have to use, and I've been slowly and steadily learning JAWS, and I found that far more easy to use. It doesn't seem to jump into weird places quite as often as VoiceOver does.
You're talking to two people. You use VoiceOver every day, as well as Windows. And I've got to say, Robin, I can't disagree with what Red says about VoiceOver being difficult at times. Impenetrable is an interesting choice of word, because in some cases, I think a lot of people do feel that.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Apple had for VoiceOver on the Mac was a good one in theory or in principle, which is that, you know, if it's a toolbar, let's not have to tab through every single item or, you know, go through every single item manually. Let's just group those together. And if you want to interact with anything on that toolbar, you kind of go into it. But it didn't really work in practice, or it is challenging. I absolutely agree with what Red says. You know, sometimes just take something as central as the Messages app in macOS, you know, to send and receive iMessages and texts and things. You can tab to go from one thing to another, and then shift tab will take you to a completely different place. So the inconsistency is quite disconcerting, and Windows feels a lot more reliable, a lot more consistent like that. And to be fair, on the Windows side, they've cracked that whole kind of interaction thing just by offering a different keystroke to move between different areas of an app, which is F6, and that's almost universally adopted. I think, in fact, I think it is. There's not a single app I know that doesn't allow you to jump between the different areas of the... So they've kind of cracked that as well, but in a much more reliable way. Having said that, I love Mac OS as well.
This is my difficulty with Mac, because I do like it, and I think for a lot of video work I do, for a lot of the other stuff I do, I find that it's really useful and it's brilliant. I mean, video editing on a Mac is actually something that's really possible if you're blind, which I would never have thought a few months back. And it's interesting, Red, because we were talking about this before we came on, and one of the things you said to me that I thought really stood out was that you can only learn so many languages at once. At school, you did French and German, but you were much better at French. If you focused on one, you were better at that, as opposed to trying to learn both at the same time.
That's exactly it. And actually, with JAWS and NVDA and to an extent, Narrator that I've used a bit, they all feel like European languages, whereas VoiceOver feels like learning Sanskrit.
Yes, it does. It really does. And a lot of people walk away from it for that reason. Interestingly, a lot of people love VoiceOver on the iPhone and just cannot get to grips with it on the Mac at all. And I think a lot of people will be pleased to hear you say that, Red, because it's true. It is difficult. And I've... my own experience has been that I've just persevered with it because I do like the Mac. I love it. And like Robin, who actually got me into this, I added a virtual machine to my computer, which allows me to have Windows on my Mac as well, which means at any one time I could have any number of voices talking to me. Now, I have to say, this is fun, Red. Robin has the voice Ava. He prefers Ava for everything in his life as his speech voice.
Monogamous.
And... absolutely. And he has it on JAWS and Windows. I have got no idea how you know between the JAWS on the Windows side, the Mac on and the VoiceOver side, how you know what's talking to you at any given time. I can't fathom that.
I don't care.
Yeah, some things, and they do sometimes talk over each other if something's updating in the virtual machine, or you know, you're reading a document in using JAWS, for example, and then the Mac OS notification pops up for a reminder or something. So yeah, sometimes there's two, it's like a bit schizophrenic, but I love it. And on my phone as well. I'd love to have it on the watch, but unfortunately she's not available.
Yeah, but we're in a bit of a world of our own in that one, aren't we?
Absolutely.
I don't think there's many of us out there that do that. I do think it's a good idea because it does allow you to learn both. But I think for you, Red, and this is the interesting bit for me, this is where I think you represent more people than we do for sure.
Oh, this is not a... No general recommendation, guys. It's not.
No,
without...
but well, it could be to someone, but
oh,
I think for most people,
we would recommend
you just want a single track. You just want to have one place to go for everything, and I get that, and that's why you've sort of settled on Windows. So, what is it about Windows that you like? I know you've not quite gone with VoiceOver, but what is it about Windows that you've kind of got used to?
I find it leads me down a very rational path. Now that I've memorized what all the tabs are and what I need for the various programs that I use, which are pretty basic, you know, it's mostly Outlook for my emails, going online using Google Chrome, bit of editing using Adobe Audition. Now that I've mastered what the tabs are and what the keystrokes are, I know the paths to follow, and it always seems to take me there so long as I press the right buttons. And more importantly, as you know, I'm a rock climber. I've got quite mashed up fingers from shoving them into cracks in rock and so on and so forth. Actually, when I hit a wrong keystroke, usually the escape button or the alt tab button will take me back to where I need to be. And for me, having a reverse gear that actually takes me back to where I want to be is one of the most important things, because otherwise I just get frustrated and start beating myself up for having done something wrong.
Mm. Now, you're wanting a new computer. What is going to be the purpose of that machine for you?
Basically, it's just a bit of home computing, checking emails, going onto the internet, looking stuff up, either for work or for home use, listening to a bit of music, downloading music off Amazon. No hissing in the background, please. a bit of audio editing. See, I have to use Adobe Audition version 3 because anything subsequent to that is impenetrable.
Audacity.
If you're visually impaired.
It doesn't do Audacity. Not yet. We haven't talked.
I don't do Audacity yet. This can be a future program for you. So
you're going to learn a lot here, Red.
basically, you know, I'm not that adventurous. I just want a machine that works, that doesn't keep shutting down like my very aged MacBook Air, which I think really is probably full of fluff or just wants to retire. And I just want something that's portable, reliable, and does the job.
Now, earlier when Stephen was saying, you know, as blind people, we don't necessarily, you know, need to consider that it's got the best, most high-res screen or whatever. But he didn't mention, he didn't say, oh, and we don't need it to be sexy. And I was really pleased that he didn't say that, because that's totally not true. Certainly for me, having something that is not only kind of portable, decent battery life, decent specs, but also, you know, feels nice and well engineered and doesn't flex when you kind of pick it up by a corner.
Yeah.
That sort of thing I think is really, really important. So for me, so is that important for you? And what's your, you know, have you got a bit of budget to...
I've got a bit of budget, and I'm not so bothered about how it looks or feels, but I want something that is durable because I am clumsy.
Yeah, exactly. You want something that can take a bit of knocking around. And the thing is, these days, a lot of these machines do. And of course, there are some real benefits to buying a machine today as opposed to 5 years ago, where you used to get spinning hard drives in them, which meant that, you know, the failure rate was higher if you dropped it, or, you know, there could be problems with it. But a lot of these machines now are pretty solid, and even the hard drives themselves are solid state, which is really good because it allows you to have a bit of flexibility, you know, if you do, you know, knock it off a desk or you do bump it into a bag or whatever, it's not going to be the end of its days. And I think most laptops are like that now, to be honest. But there are some considerations. Now, are you planning to use JAWS, or are you going to use NVDA or Narrator? What are you going to use as your screen reader of choice?
I will probably use NVDA, and I'm going to try and teach myself Narrator seems pretty similar to JAWS, and ideally, if I don't have to pay for anything and if it's built into the computer, I'm assuming that it's actually going to work better with the apps that I'm using.
Now, there are lots of choices out there, and you know, you walk into a superstore, you know, a big PC superstore, you're going to find tons and tons of different machines, lots of different choices. What should you look for, I guess, is the question you're wanting to answer when it comes to buying a laptop. Well, for me, as a JAWS user, and even if you're going to use NVDA, and even if you're going to use Narrator, having access to the insert key, Robin, I think you would agree, is probably one of the key keys that you would want access
to.
Yeah, that was completely unintentional. But, you know, that is a really important one for me. Insert key has to be there. You can, of course, change modifier keys, can't you? You could use caps lock. In some cases, I think you could actually customize it yourself if you wanted to.
Certainly, you can remap keys if you want to go to that extent. Or you could use the laptop layout of, you know, but all the screen readers have different keyboard layouts depending on whether you've got a numpad, you know, an extended keyboard on there or not. Most laptops these days, the smaller, more portable ones, more lightweight ones, don't obviously have a numpad over to the right hand side, so you'd be looking at some sort of laptop layout or twiddling keys, and you know, most screen readers allow you to redefine hotkeys. So yeah, the caps lock key, I would probably argue, I mean, both NVDA and JAWS allow you to use that as an alternative. So, you know, that's a viable option. If you are using the modifier key with something over on the left-hand side, it can feel a bit weird because, you know, you'd really want a modifier key over on the right-hand side as well. But as I say, you can remap keys relatively easily using little utilities. But keyboard layout, I mean, this is a really good point, in as much as some laptops don't actually come with really quite important keys. So they might not have a delete key. You might have to hold down an FN key, some sort of, you know, function key to turn the backspace into a delete, say. So, you know, there are some things that are really quite important that you don't, you might not necessarily realize until you've got it home or you've, you know, it's arrived. I mean, most things allow you to return them, which is great, you know, no questions asked, but yeah.
But a lot of the time you don't know, do you? I mean, exactly. I got a Surface Pro 7. Oh, no, I beg your pardon, it was a Surface Pro 6. I'm splitting hairs here, but it was a Surface Pro 6. And from Microsoft, and I don't know if you know this one, Red, but it's kind of the tablet style laptop, which has got a detachable keyboard, and I really liked it, and I thought it was really nice, and I spent a long time setting it up as best I could, anyway, and you know, getting it all ready, and you know, was all excited about it, and then I, you know, headed to where I thought the insert key was, and couldn't find it, and then had to get Be My Eyes support to go through every single key on the keyboard. Couldn't find insert anywhere. So then contacted Microsoft directly through Be My Eyes, and they went through every single key. They couldn't find it either. And then said, oh, yeah, I don't think that actually has an insert key.
And that is exactly what I want to avoid.
Yeah.
You are more patient and interested in these things than I am. That would have me dangling it out of a third-story window going... Am I just fated to never being able to use technology fully?
But that's it. And you're right. And most people would be in that situation where you just think, oh, you know, sod this. You know, it's just, you know, yeah. That's the nicest way of saying it. But, you know, it is so challenging when that happens. But, you know, so that's one thing. The insert key is really important to make sure you have. But another one that's really important for me, and I found this to my cost as well, I had an old Dell tablet laptop that I hadn't used in a long time. It's still a very good machine, actually, but I just haven't used it for a long time. It was lying gathering dust, and I thought, I'm going to bring it back out and use it. And one of the problems I had was I couldn't get any of the function keys to work, because what had happened was all the function keys were, instead of function keys, were actually things like volume up and down, mute, brightness up and down. You know, they kind of became alternative function keys. And I couldn't figure out, other than holding down the FN key all the time, to make the function keys work, which of course makes logical sense when you think about it, I found that actually that was quite irritating. If I was trying to hold down insert, which it did have, it had the insert key, insert, then I'd have to hold down function and say F7. That's quite difficult to achieve. You know, you're like, hang on, right, so function, insert, and then your thumb's
it's
trying to reach
F7. Pianist stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and just it became a nightmare. So what I looked into was, how do I make this work? And it requires something called function lock, which some laptops have and some don't. And that means, function lock means you can essentially lock on your function keys all the time, so that you can always have access to the F7 and everything else, or F6 or F5 or whatever. But if you wanted to, say, for example, use those alternative features, such as volume up and down, you would just hold down the function key and then use them. And I prefer that way of working.
In the most extreme example, some of these Ultrabooks that are really thin and you know, try and skim off everything that they don't need from a kind of a weight and size point of view, they actually dispense with the function row altogether, and the number you have to hold down the FN key to turn those into the function keys, and there you've got no choice about, you know, toggling to make it a permanent function row, not unless you don't like numbers, of course.
And there is another key on the keyboard which I find very useful, and that is the you can essentially create it comes up with a context menu, so it gives you the right click option, if you like, on an item. So instead of on JAWS, for example, you would hold down Shift and F10 to achieve a right click with a mouse. Some keyboards actually have got a key, it's different on every one.
Mm-hmm.
Applications key, that's the word, thank you. The applications key, which does exactly that, which performs as that right click, and that can be really useful. There are, of course, programs out there that you can use to create those keys. If you wanted to turn, say, a specific key into the applications key, you can do that as well. But I think for you, Red, it's fair to say that you just want it to work out the box. You don't really want to think
about absolutely. It. And, you know, familiarity is a good thing. The Lenovo that we get given at RNIB to work on as our work laptop is, you know, it fulfills a lot of the things that I need it to do. And if I can get something that feels familiar to that, then I haven't got to get my head into a different space when I sit down to use my home computer rather than my work one.
And there's one other aspect I should bring up, and that is the number pad. Now, this is an optional thing when it comes to computers and keyboards, and it depends, I guess, on the size of the laptop you want. If you don't mind having a machine that's, say, 15.6 inch, you can have the addition of a number pad on that as well, which could be very useful for navigating JAWS, NVDA, Narrator. You have that numpad. It's also, I find, just I really struggle with numbers generally, putting them in from the number row. So, you know, having the number row, almost that calculator style on your right-hand side, is just really useful, just really handy to have. And of course, you can use the zero as you're supposed to. I didn't know this, but you are supposed to use the zero in a lot of cases on JAWS as your modifier key. So zero is the JAWS key in some way.
Have you not driven JAWS primarily from the number pad? I mean, that was how I did it for the longest time when, you know, I had a normal clacky keyboard on the desk and not, you know, before everyone went to laptops. And then for the longest time, I had a huge HP laptop, which I actually really liked, but it must have weighed about 3 kilos. And that had a number pad as well. Yeah, that's how you're supposed to. Well, that's, to many people, the primary way of driving JAWS, because your thumb is there. All the other modifier keys are under your fingers on the number pad. And that zero is your friend to drive everything JAWS. Yeah, that's
if
definitely...
you're taught that, yes, yeah. But I wasn't taught that.
Yeah.
I wasn't taught anything.
You
needed
to
learn it
make
myself,
the
pretty much.
Transition way after the days of big clacky keyboards. Yeah.
Yeah, but so again, it depends on what you're looking for. So the question is, and we'll start to get to some actual physical solutions in a second, but. Are you wanting something small? Are you wanting portable? Are you wanting Ultrabook? Are you wanting something so you don't mind the size or being a little bit bigger?
No, I'm not so bothered with size. I'm used to carrying heavy stuff around in my rucksack if I go climbing. So it doesn't particularly bother me if it's a bit bigger, so long as it's got increased functionality. I don't want something where I can't plug USB sticks into it, because a lot of stuff comes to me on USB sticks. And, you know, I need to be able to plug them in and use them. So, yeah, it's that's not so much of a deal breaker. I just, as I say, yeah, obviously, I don't want to be carrying a 3 kilo
beast
old style laptop around with me. But, you know, I'm quite happy to have something a bit chunkier than most people.
So. One brand that I tend to drift towards every time is the Dell brand. And actually, Lenovo second to that. I think there are other options out there from Asus and from HP as well. But when you start getting into those other brands, what you're starting to move towards are more what I would call lifestyle machines. They're very good, very functional, very powerful, no issue at all. And no doubt our listeners will all be jumping in with their ideas over the next couple of weeks by email. You know, here, no, try this and try that. Here's a great machine, and you know, I bought the best and all that. But I can only tell you what I can go on based on what I've said, which is that it has to have that insert key. It has to have the function lock capability so that you can use your function row separately. It ideally has a number pad. That would be nice. But if you're not fussed about that, then there are options there as well. And ultimately, you know, it comes to things like the Dell. Now, if you want top of the line on Dell, you're talking the Dell XPS model. That is arguably one of the best laptops out there at the moment. Every single review I've read, anything that says, you know, what is the top laptop at the moment in the, you know, in the world, it is the Dell XPS. That's not my view, it's their view. Every single reviewer says the same thing. And it's a great machine. Yeah, I mean, I've not had a play with the newer ones. The newer ones are very nice and very slim and very light. Very powerful as well. So it's got all of that. Doesn't come with a number pad. That's the only thing. But you do get it in a range of sizes as well. You can get the very small 13-inch. You get a 2-in-1 option if you want the tablet version. But again, that's something which I wouldn't recommend unless you really want to use JAWS or Narrator or NVDA with a touchscreen. I don't.
No.
So, you know, I'd avoid that. But that's the thing with the XPS range. You get different options. You get the ones with the touchscreen or without the touchscreen. Of course, that impacts on the price as well. But one thing people don't realize is that there is another range from Dell that is just as good. Maybe not as flashy, maybe not as sexy, although it's not unsexy, I would argue. And that's the Inspiron range, or the Inspiron. I'm never quite sure how you're supposed to pronounce that. But if we said the Inspiron range, they run from, you know, I mean, very basic prices, about, what, 250 quid right up to, you know, top end. But, you know, what you're getting with that and the Inspiron range is a good machine with good processors. I would recommend for you to get something that is powerful. You're looking for 16 gig of RAM minimum, I would say. Mm. You don't want to go any lower than that. Would you agree with that, Robin? 8 gigs probably not a wise move if you're not able to upgrade it yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Unless price, you know, is really your factor. 8 gigs is going to be fine, but there'll be times when you think, okay, I should have gone for more. I'm, you know, I've got a Adobe Audition open here and I just need to quickly go and watch this video over here or something. And it will struggle a little bit. They'll be waiting. And from a future-proofing point of view, because, you know, software and operating systems never get less hungry for RAM. So, yeah, definitely 16.
Is there any point in going to 32?
Not unless you're video editing.
Yeah, I mean, the issue you have with that is that, and I think also the price just goes way up when you start to do that. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, I've been looking through a lot of these laptops, and actually, just trying to get one with 16 gig is hard enough. So many of the laptops available, the consumer laptops now, are all 8 gig. And that's fine for most users. And, you know, if we weren't using screen readers, I'd be saying to you, yeah, get one with 8 gig. That will be fine. But if you're wanting 16 gig, you're going to have to look a bit harder. Now, one I found, which is the Inspiron 14-inch, it's the 7000 range. That will, you can get that with 16 gig RAM on it. You can get it with the latest 10th generation i7 processor, 10th generation, which is really important because that's the very latest processor, the brain of the computer. You know, you can get machines that will cost a bit less and will have 9th gen. It's not going to be terrible if you do that. But, you know, I often think if you're buying this with the intention of having it for a few years, try and get the best you can, as much as your budget will allow. Then, of course, the other thing to consider in all of this is the hard drive size. You don't want to be, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'll just get 128 gig because everything's in the cloud. And then you realize you've downloaded half the cloud and your hard drive's full and you can't do anything with it. So consider hard drive space. You know, in what feels like years ago, but it wasn't that long ago, I guess, your hard drives used to be 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte. Mm-hmm. But now you notice they're all smaller. They're 512 is considered big, and that's because of the power of these solid state drives, and they're far more expensive than the old spinning drives were. So for that reason, it costs a lot more, which means you don't get as much for what you would have got before. So my recommendation is 256 or 512 mm-hmm. gig solid state drive. I think you want to get to that level. So that would be something to consider. And in terms of graphics, I mean, the Inspiron 14, the reason I bring this one up, and I'm not in commission for this, I just want to put that out there, I don't get anything for this, but the reason I mention it is because it just kind of ticks a lot of the boxes for you, and it ticks a lot of boxes for most people, I think. And there are very similar you know, types of machines from HP and others, but it does tick the boxes in terms of having the insert key, the function lock key. It doesn't have the separate number pad. This is a 14-inch laptop. So again, it's more portable. It'll be a bit lighter. Doesn't have a touch screen. Again, I think you'll like that. And it's got a decent, actually not a bad graphics card in there. Now, it's got an NVIDIA GeForce card with 2 gig RAM. Now, you might think, well, what does that matter? I'm not going to use the screen. But your screen reader does use the screen because, okay, you can't see it, but your screen reader can. So it's important that you do have a decent graphics card in there. It doesn't have to be brilliant, but it has to be decent enough. And also, a graphics card's important because this graphics card comes with 2 gig of memory, which you won't use as much as that for your graphics because you're not doing graphics intensive stuff. You're not playing games. Mm. You're not doing photo editing. You're not doing video editing. But it is important because it's got that RAM on board. And what that means is it's not using your 16 gig memory on graphics because it's got its own brain. So the graphics take care of themselves, which means that 16 gig RAM you have in there, that bottleneck you have, if you like, that makes sure all the programs operate will remain open to whatever you need it to do in terms of Chrome, in terms of Adobe Edition, in terms of running NVDA on top of that or whatever. So I think you get a lot of option there. And a powerful machine, and that one's coming in at just under £1,200. Now, you compare that to an XPS, where you could probably pay maybe £1,400 or £1,500 for similar. Just over the 1,000 mark, you're looking at getting something that is powerful enough. And I think, unfortunately, although there are lots and lots of cheap laptops at £300, £400, they're great for most people, but they're not great for screen reader users. You agree with that, Robin?
Oh, absolutely. Before the conversation that we had here, I was going to go light and ultrabook. But it seems like, that's a brilliant recommendation there, by the way.
I mean, Lenovo as well. Let's not forget Lenovo. And, one thing I would say to you, Red, is, and I did this as well, I got to looking at the 14-inch Lenovo ThinkPad of before. I think the newer ones, the Carbon, I think it's called the Carbon X1 range, from Lenovo, they're very good, but they're very expensive. And truthfully, I think for the money, you could probably just spend even on a used or secondhand or even as new Lenovo on eBay, as long as it's a ThinkPad business machine, essentially similar to what you've got right now. Those are great machines, really, really good machines. I mean, I think for you, there's also that sense of familiarity with Lenovo. You've got the layout there, which doesn't change on any Lenovo machine. You can get that with the touchpad, the number pad as well, so you've got that option. So there are lots of options out there, which is good news, and they tend to center around Dell and Lenovo. Business laptops tend to have the right approach because they have the functions of them, that we're looking for. I'm a big fan of the Dell Vostro range. It's really unfortunate it's only a business laptop from Dell, but the Dell Vostro is a brilliant laptop because ultimately it's the Dell XPS without a touchscreen and without the fancy OLED screen. It has all the power built in, but it just doesn't have the price tag to go with it. It's about half the price. And I just wish someone would, from Dell would let, us all have access to that. That would be quite nice. You've obviously got lots of choice out there, and it seems that, there are lots of options available to you.
Great. Okay. And cost-wise, obviously, you get what you pay for. Mm. Are there any grants or are there any discounts that any of these companies do for visually impaired people?
That's a really good question. Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, when I bought my MacBook Air all those years ago, I marched into the Apple store on Regent Street and just said, I'm a blind person. I think you should give me a 10% discount. And we managed to negotiate it to 5%, which on a MacBook Air makes a hell of a lot of difference. Yep. But... Yeah. So I'm prepared to sort of stick my chin out and see what happens. But
it's an interesting question, Red. The short answer to that question from the companies themselves is no, because there is no way that they are offering right now, for example, VAT relief on any of their products. And that's something that, is a bit of a debate in the blind community. Should we get VAT relief on certain products? For example, an Apple iPhone or a MacBook, which has got VoiceOver built in. Arguably, PCs now are in the same way because they have Narrator built in. So, could we, because we're blind and we have to buy those specific products, get VAT relief? Is that fair considering so can everyone else? It's a bit of a debate going on in the community on that one. But there is a grant option from RNIB. Now, this is for people who aren't in work or at least who are on certain benefits. RNIB offer grants of up to £500 for certain small items of technology to people who are registered blind or partially sighted on a means-tested benefit and who've been unable to get statutory funding. So that's £500 towards something. So a lot of people, for example, have been using that grant to get an Orbit Reader 20, the Braille display, or access to an iPad. That can be really beneficial there. But because you are in full-time employment, and I'm not going to ask you on air what your benefit situation is, but if you were in a means-tested benefit, then you would apply and be applicable for that. Otherwise, I'm afraid not.
Just going to have to work some overtime.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it used to be that if specialist suppliers were selling a mainstream bit of kit that had some assistive something on it, like a screen reader, then that was VAT exempt. But I don't know of any that are selling laptops with NVDA on it, for example. But yeah, just go in and try your arm.
I will do.
Well, Red, I hope that helps, you know, in your search. Now, have you any other questions, Red? Because we've given you a lot of advice here, a lot of information. Just a lot to take in, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, actually, there's a lot for me to chew on, and I'm going to sit down with my very computer literate 20-year-old daughter and go through all that. But I think you've given me a very good steer. The only other question I'll ask you is, whenever I close my work laptop with its enormous bump-ons on it, it starts protesting loudly. And I was just wondering if there is any alternative to the big bump-ons that I've been buying from R&IB.
Ah, yes. Well, it's interesting you asked this, because I had exactly the same problem. I was using my bump-ons, and then every time I shut the laptop lid, I was almost damaging the laptop. Or even worse, I was trying to, you know, close it and get it to click shut, and it wouldn't because of the bump-ons. And what I found was a brilliant little thing from R&IB, which is not sold for this purpose, but it is a bump-on, but it's called Lock Dots. L-O-C-D-O-T-S, Lock Dots, two separate words. And what it lets you do is it lets you put them on a key, but it's got very, very small bumps on it. So they're quite sharp bumps. I mean, you will notice them. You'll be aware of them. They're better than, for example, what the bumps are often on the F and the J keys on your computer. They're better than that. But they're small enough and they're thin enough so you can put them on the laptop keyboard and then close the lid and not have an issue with scratching or damaging your screen.
More brilliant advice, thank you.
And you can get them from the R&IB shop as well. So, you know, if you want to get them, just get them from the R&IB shop at rnib.org.uk.
Yeah, I can agree. I used to put those on the F4 and the F7 keys as well, because those are the two that I use most, but also because when you feel where those are, you can very easily tell where the ones around them are as well, because we use the F keys a lot.
Can I just say, when I first got bump-ons, I put them on every key on the keyboard. And then I thought, hang on a minute, I don't know any key difference here. I can't work this out. I learned that mistake very quickly.
Keyboard with measles.
Red, thank you so much. Just a reminder, you are, of course, the host of Read On. How can people enjoy that show?
Well, you can catch a new episode every Friday at 1 p.m, repeated over the weekend. And you can always download it as a podcast. Just look for Read On, the audiobook show.
Red Sill, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
thanks,
guys.
Red.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And he's been very quiet all the way through the episode, the way I like it.
Hi,
it's Andy.
I was,
he's back.
The pubs are opened. I was down the pub. no, hello,
very
guys.
Very socially distanced from us.
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, oh, yeah, exactly. Thank goodness this is all on Zoom. Right, okay. I can't smell you. That's good news. Right, let's get into the email inbox, shall we?
So this, what have you got? We'll start off with a quick one from Louise about the Amazon Echo Show 5. Just a super quick question. Does the Amazon Echo Show 5 display the name of the radio station being played and also the piece of music that's being played? Anyway, yes, that's from Louise.
Yes.
Oh, well, we all know who'll know the answer to that one.
Yes.
Robin
Next
says
question.
Yes.
There you go. That's that.
Yeah,
oh, that
no,
easy.
It does.
Okay.
So if you say radio, play Radio 4, then it says Radio 4 on there.
Or R&IB Connect Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. With some kind of, you know, graphics to do with the station. If you ask either Spotify or Amazon Music to play something, then you will get all the info about the song, the artist. I think with Amazon Music you get a picture of either the album art or the person's face, and on Spotify something similar, I think just album art, not a picture of the person as well.
Okay, all right, so got a lot of info, and that's read by voice view as well if you want it to be.
Yeah, if you've
that's
got
the idea,
yeah,
isn't it?
Got that on.
Yeah, okay, all right. Okay, well, that's good. I mean, that's the one thing that's good about this. The Google Home, I've not gone back to the Google Home, what's it called these days? The Nest?
Yeah.
What's the big one called? The Nest, the one with the screen. Hub, that's it. Yeah, the Nest Hub, as it's called now. I've not gone back to that for a while because the screen reader on it basically was just reading out everything as, like, you know, 1485649.jpg, thinking, what's going to what's happened here? I'm sure that's been updated. I certainly hope it has, but it kind of just put me off it, to be honest. Mm. I wasn't getting that much back from it. But it's good news that the voice view one on Amazon is working good.
To be
that.
Really honest, okay. with Echoes with screens, I only turn voice view on when I want to interact with the screen. I don't have it on all the time. Now, that might be because there are other family members around that don't need voice view, but it can be a little bit chatty as well.
Mm.
So, but it's so easy to ask it to be turned on.
Marry someone with a visual impairment, then it doesn't matter. Right, okay. Let's get another email.
This one is from Steph. I think it is time to show Robin some moral support.
Aww.
What is wrong with everybody? It's chocolate in the fridge and Hamish Macbeth always.
Yeah.
That's from Steph. Very short.
Somebody Steph. Might, you know, had to sooner or later. Thank you.
It's nice to know that one person agrees with you. Yeah. And it's Steph. That's absolutely
that brilliant. Could actually just be my sister. Well. I don't know.
Steph Christofferson.
That would say a lot, wouldn't it?
Oh, well,
it?
There you go.
Listen, I meant to say this to people. If you're emailing in, I know some people do, but do tell us where you're from. It'd be interesting to know where you are, you're actually getting in touch from. So I know some of you do that already, but if you are emailing in to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, then, you know, it'd be great to hear where you're actually getting in touch from. I mean, we don't need house addresses, you know, just your town
no
or your
phone
city
numbers, no.
would be great. No, exactly. No PIN numbers. Well, if you want to send them, that's
up to
you.
You could also tell us how you're listening to us as well. We always like that information.
That's right,
if you're listening via the Lady A, or you're listening on the TV, or however. Yeah, that's always interesting information.
Or app or whatever. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get another
So this is a long one. This is from Julian. Hello, Stephen, Robin and Andy. I was listening to podcast 330, having a little nap during the Apple bits. You and I both, Julian, when I was jerked away by Stephen doing a tutorial and a glowing review of the Dolphin Easy Reader. Do you remember this, Stephen?
I do.
To be honest, from my experience of Easy Reader, I thought it a bit too glowing. But when I was not going to say anything about it. I'm very aware that my emails to the show in the recent months have painted me as Mr. Negative. That is not who I usually am, although I will admit I'm getting grumpier since the government threw away the key to my cage. Yes, I got one of those letters, you know, the one that says, you're at high risk, stop breathing in immediately or you will certainly die, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm straying from the point, says Julian. I was going to keep my thoughts to myself, but out of curiosity, I had a look in the Play Store to see what other people thought. Stephen, Andy, Robin, the sun has come out, the birds are singing, I am not alone, I am in a crowd. Lots of people are not keen on the app. I will not repeat their comments here, you can easily look for yourselves. I do, however, think that there is one major problem with Easy Reader that potential users should be made aware of, and that is that Dolphin hide all of their downloaded book files. There is no facility that I can find within the app to export books to another device. If someone knows better, I would love to know, but I have tried with 4 different Android file managers and by connecting my phone to Windows 10, and searching by file extension, book name, most recent downloads, and also by educated guess. Nothing. The files are nowhere to be found. I did find a folder named Your Dolphin Easy Reader, and within that another one named Downloads, but it was empty. I'm forced to conclude that Dolphin hide the files in some sort of vault of the kind we might see in encryption software. Now this leads to 2 deal killers for me. One, the book can only be read on the device it was downloaded to. If you want to listen to it on another device, you have no hope here. I like to drop files into a memory stick and then listen on my sovereign book player. Why? Well, the book I'm currently listening to is a good example. Tombland by C.J. Sampson. It's an excellent book. I recommend it to all your listeners, but it is 38 hours long. I'll say that again. 38 hours long. Can you imagine the palaver of having a Bluetooth up to a speaker or a headphone every time that I find an odd half hour to listen to a book that length? And the second point, Julian says, books from the RNIB do not auto-delete. Please remind users of the app that they need to manually remove books when they have finished with them. If not, the storage space in the phone will steadily diminish. Now, this may not matter at first, but these are big files. A heavy reader will eventually notice the loss. Fortunately, Dolphin do provide a button for this. My problem with it is, how do I know it's really all gone? We know that some of the apps are less than stellar about cleaning up after themselves. Stephen's Bête Noire. Overdrive is an example. When a book was returned, it disappeared from the app, but a quick search with a file manager would reveal that a folder for the book was always left behind, and within that folder would be the graphics file for the book cover, etc. How can I ever know for sure that Easy Reader is not doing the same? Julian says, that completes my rant. As a last thought, regarding apps that are not popular as you might have think, have you looked at the rating for the KNFB reader recently? Wow, how the mighty have fallen. That's from Julian.
Yes, it's interesting to hear people. I had gone on to comment on a feeder. I don't know what it was. It was maybe VI Talk or forum on Facebook somewhere. And I suggested, you know, how someone might use Easy Reader, and I got a lot of backlash from people saying, oh, it's a terrible app, it's awful, it doesn't work, it's no good to me, I don't like it, I hate it, I want Overdrive. And I am amazed at the amount of people who are not keen on Easy Reader. I agree with you, Julian. I think there's not a lot of love out there for it, and I really, I'll be honest, I don't understand why. I think the things you've picked up on are things that are not relevant to the app itself. I mean, the ability to download the book and transfer it to a device of your choosing is available to you via the reading service's website. And I can hear Julian right now tossing something at the radio. I'm going to duck out the way of whatever he's chucked at me, because he's probably saying, yeah, I know that, but I'm, you know, I'm maybe having issues with that as well. But, you know, that is the way to do it, because if I want to put my book onto, say, the Victor Reader, that's how you do it. You would get the book from RNIB, downloadable files you get, and then you can transfer them onto the SD card for the Victor Reader. Equally the same for the Sovereign. So I am confused by that, because that would be the method to do that. I wouldn't imagine. I get that it would be easier potentially to do it that way, and if there was any way to do it, it would be via Android, because there's no way you're going to get into the system on the iPhone to be able to find
it. More so these days, but yeah, certainly it's not as open an operating system.
No.
I mean,
no way.
I like the iOS Easy Reader app. I really do. It's come on in leaps and bounds. And now that it's interfacing with the new reading services rather than the old Overdrive library, the hurdles that you have to jump over to download a book and start listening have much reduced. Now, whether that's iOS only, because he's obviously talking about the Google Play Store and Android, and, you know, if the reviews of Easy Reader in the Play Store aren't great, then that maybe does reflect on that. I'm afraid I don't know. I've not used the Android version. But
it doesn't sound like Julian's got an issue with the app using the app. It's the functions of the app. Things like being able to get the access to the folder where the books have downloaded to is something he would like. I just don't see that as a function of an app. That's not how I would see it. The way I see an app is wherever you download the app to is the device you will use the app on and all of its associated content. I mean, it's interesting because Audible has this challenge. I mean, I do like Audible, and I still subscribe to it because my wife loves it. And the reason we love it, and this will change over time, is because of the Amazon Echo. You know, I'm able to listen, you know, I can buy a book on the Audible website, and that book is instantly available on my Echo to listen to. Or I can download it and listen to it on the phone. And, you know, it keeps track of it all and all of that. And I think that's really good. I think that's a brilliant thing. And there's no denying it's good. And I think that's exactly where RNIB will end up, because the RNIB library is expected to appear on the Amazon Echo as well. So that's good news. But we're kind of getting there with all of this stuff. We're not there yet, though, are we?
Yeah, I agree with
what
you're saying.
I know that's annoying to people.
Yeah, what you were saying earlier, that, you know, if you're going to use the app, you'd expect that's where you listen to it from. And, you know, it is called Easy Reader. So it's not surprising that it doesn't offer you lots of different alternatives, ways of getting it out of that. And so for my money, you know, I know it might not be what you want to hear, Julian, but if you can get that those files from your PC, particularly if you've got a SD card reader or whatever, and do it that way, like you were saying, Stephen. So yeah, I think, you know, but for me, it's a very seamless experience. And
The second point as well about deletion of books, I mean, that has got to be... It'd be nice if they had an auto expiry on it, but then that was the whole point about the library now, that you don't need to give back the books. You don't have
to. It used to, with Overdrive.
Well, that's right. You had to give back the book.
Constantly disappearing.
Yeah, you had to. And this is the bit that confuses me, because in some ways I think there's been so many improvements that have been good. And those improvements are the things that people aren't happy about now. I mean, I'm not, you know, selling Easy Reader here. You know, ultimately, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. I guess the problem, of course, is for many people who use iPhones or Android phones, is what else would you use to download? And if you're having trouble with the website, again, I'm hoping that a lot of these things will change and improvements will come, because, I mean, for my money, my experience has been really good on the RNIB Reading Services website and really good on Easy Reader. Mm-hmm. That's just been my experience. I'm not expecting to be able to download those books to that device and then drop them somewhere else.
And if you are looking forward to the A-Lady skill coming along, then in the meantime, you could just connect to your Echo by asking it to connect to my phone, and then you can just play and pause it from there, either from the phone or by voice. So,
well, that's exactly true. Yeah. And she will automatically connect to your phone. I do that in my bedroom all the time if I want to listen to something. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, right, let's get another couple of emails in before we go.
So this next one from David in Canada. Hi from Ontario, Canada to you all. I thoroughly enjoyed your discussion on GPS back in episode 333. I don't have very good sense of direction, and I've been exploring GPS technology for several years. I use a Victor Reader Trek as my GPS device. It has a breadcrumb feature that allows for route recording while being guided by a sighted person. I've tried many iPhone apps, but I've found nothing that compares with the Trek. And when I walk to work, I have to take a longer route than a sighted walker would have to take, because otherwise I would have to walk on busy streets with no sidewalks in the industrial area of town. No GPS app that I know would tell me to take the route that I take, which is why I like the Trek's record route feature. Also, the Trek allows me to record landmarks with my voice, and the physical buttons make this an easy process. I also find that the consistent accuracy of when I hear those landmarks to be amazing, definitely within a meter or so most of the time. I've often wondered, however, why blind people can't access the same location systems that land surveyors use. I've heard that they can achieve accuracy to within centimetres. I also look forward to the day where we can use accurate indoor navigation systems to get around. David wraps up by saying, I love your show. Keep up the good work. Yes, that's from David.
Thanks, David. We did talk about this at length. And I wish that we could get better GPS. It does seem to be something that will come in time. I mean, we talked about it at the time, where we maybe talk about the fusion of satellites and local 5G and how that could maybe work together to give it that positional, because I think that's certainly what we'll need for connected vehicles, as we were talking about, so that would hopefully replicate over to us. But we're not going to have that conversation again. We've had that conversation, but very interesting points. Thanks, David, for bringing that up, and I'm glad you enjoyed our chat on that. Let's get another email.
So this one's from John. Hi team, excellent show as always. The disagreement that you've been having between NVDA and Narrator. I use NVDA and will continue to do so, as you have the added bonus of add-ons, which work very well with Dropbox and Goldwave. I don't think that there is currently a Narrator equivalent. That's from John the Soul Man Flynn.
Ah, it's the Soul Man. I've never been in a while, John. Now, is that the add-ons we're talking about here, Robin? Is that like scripts?
Yeah, kind of. But definitely NVDA is more configurable, and because it's a community project, there are other, a bit like JAWS scripts for, you know, Zoom or Teams or whatever. It definitely is extensible, where Narrator is what you get, really, what you're given.
That'll change, though, because they are bringing in scripting capabilities for Narrator. And I think that's the point. You know, I would say this is all like age. It's all like we've all these various children of various ages You know, and some are obviously clearly more developed based on their age than others. So narrator is the baby, and eventually it will learn to walk, and then it'll learn to talk, and then it'll become annoying. And so it'll go on, like the rest of them.
I think narrator is the oldest works. But late developer. But yeah.
Well, yeah, well, you could argue that, yes. You could,
but no, you're absolutely right. We're going to see a converging of ability in our children.
It's just taking, it's just taking a bit longer. I mean, listen, if you've tried ChromeVox, I mean, come on. It's, you know, it's narrator's not bad at all. But you're right, it hasn't got these functions. But at the same token, I think for many people, once you've picked one, whether it be you start out in narrator, and someone will, I mean, we'll get to a point, someone will, and we've heard from people who've done it, who've started out with narrator and then worked their way on perhaps to NVDA, or alternatively just stayed with narrator because they find it does the job fine. I'm hearing from a lot of people saying that. More than I thought when we had this conversation at the beginning. I was quite surprised at the amount of emails that came back in favour of narrator. And I think that's a good thing. But I don't think it's an either or. I don't think it's a narrator versus at all. Because ultimately they're both free. So you can have both. Mm-hmm. You could run both on the system. You don't have to have one or the other. You could use both. I use narrator and JAWS. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes JAWS doesn't get into the bits. I feel like, you know, one of those ads for cleaning. You know, well, my turbo scrub doesn't quite get me into the corners that I'd like, so I use my toothbrush or, you know, whatever.
Turbo scrub too.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, but the same will affect NVDA as well, because they're both third party. So yeah, there may well always be times when narrator is what you'll have to defer to, because it will speak when another one. I mean, like on boot up, for example. So, you know, when it's actually doing system updates, you can finally get some progress there. So, yeah, brilliant time to be living in when AT in general is mainstreamed and often, you know, in the box with a particular product and extremely viable. And we're finally seeing that with narrator as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we're almost out of time. Just really time to say, if you want to get in touch and share your thoughts, it was a really interesting conversation with Red today. Mm. And, you know, I'd be interested to hear other people's views on this, because I threw in my tuppence worth on what I thought was the kind of key things to think about when buying a computer. And I think I've crossed quite a lot off, but there may be other things people pick up on. So I'll be intrigued to hear on that what you think. If you want to share your thoughts, you can email us in the usual way, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We're on Twitter @RNIB Radio. And you can find us on Facebook as well and send us a message there. Andy's across all of that. So don't worry if it was reliant on me, you know, forget it. But Andy's, thank goodness, on top of that. So, yeah, just search for us there and you can send us a message by liking or subscribing or whatever it is you do on Facebook, because I don't care about Facebook. But, you know, if you use it, then...
Really selling it.
Yeah, I'm really selling it, aren't I? Well, listen, that's it for the show this week. Thank you so much to Andy. Thank you to Robin as well, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, everybody. Thanks.
Catch you again next week for another Tech Talk.